Hello and welcome, everybody. I'm Mary Elizabeth Bradford. Welcome to my coaching call, my Career Power Strategy Sessions coaching call, titled Savvy Networking Secrets for Executives. Thank you for joining me today. Today we're going to be discussing really the psychology of communicating when you are in a job transition and how to control things so that you move forward with exploring new opportunities with much more grace and ease. And networking is a really important topic when it comes to understanding how to manage this particular life cycle of your transitions with a lot of aplomb, if you will. Most people, when they get to the executive level, I think most people are uncomfortable with networking for reasons that I'll get into in a minute, but especially executives, because at the executive level, the C level, the senior VP level, we're approaching our contacts and we're sort of gently introducing the idea, look, I'm, you know, looking for a new job or things are not working out here. I'm exploring alternatives, and I'd like to get you my resume, and if you hear of anything, please, you know, pass it around or spread the word. And the reply we usually get is, oh, okay, that's great. Well, listen, if I'll keep this, and if I hear of anything, I'll let you know. So most people will do this a lot with not a lot of success. I mean, that works sometimes. Everything works a little bit to a certain extent. But I think the psychology behind that is we're doing a lot of things. The first thing we're doing when we network this way, which seems like a totally natural way to network, but what we're doing is we're sort of handing off the responsibility of our job search to that other person and saying, here, you help me solve this problem or this issue. So there's not a lot of leadership and control in that approach. And so I feel that it's out of alignment, you know, emotionally and mentally, spiritually, from how a lot of executives want to operate, you know, naturally. It just doesn't feel authentic to them because it feels more is sort of hat in hand, you know, begging for a job, which is why, which would be, you know, explain perfectly why people say, God, I'm just so uncomfortable with networking, or I don't have a very good network. So that begs the question, well, how do we leverage our network then? How do we grow and leverage our network? I'm sure there's lots of people with lots of opinions on this. And this is just my personal opinion, but it happens to be born from helping thousands of executives in their job transition. So I learn from my executives and their stories and experiences just as much as I learn from getting a certification. And so I take that information, and it gives me a very unique baseline of perspective on these particular issues that executives face when they're trying to network. And the other thing that executives will do, I find, is that they will rely very heavily on recruiters, because a recruiter will give you that feeling like, oh, they're bringing the job to me. The reality of this situation is there is only a small percentage of positions at the seven-figure level that will be found on job boards and that will be found through recruiters. The majority of positions will be filled through other methods that are a little bit more grassroots, you know, whether it's an internal promotion or a networking situation. And so those are the ones that I like to concentrate on. Anyhow, when you understand that, and that the recruiter, even though it's flattering, or let's just say easy, to let them come to us with whatever position they've been given by their client company, it feels nice, but it's really limiting. It comes with built-in competition. The recruiter has a lot of control over that interview and negotiation process. They're behind closed doors talking about exact salaries and things like this. They bring in three or four other candidates typically that are already against you. You really don't have the recruiter's preference 100%. I mean, they may, unless they tell you that you're the favorite or the first pick for whatever reason. So, and you're really limiting yourself to whatever that recruiter is, you know, search is going on at any given time. And so it's very, very narrow. There are ways today to be a very entrepreneurial in your job search that create a much wider category of opportunities for yourself, where you can actually sort of cherry pick the low-hanging fruit that you want to go after, understanding that so many jobs are just filled before they're advertised. Good companies are always looking for good people. One thing that we oftentimes are short-sighted about when we are on the opposite end of a job search, we're not on the hiring end, is that a key executive, you know, the CEO's number one problem almost universally is finding and retaining key talent. So first we have to be that key talent. And then next we have to, we can do things to negotiate in such a way that we demonstrate our amazing leadership abilities just in those very initial conversations. And I think it's really important to be true to yourself and your leadership abilities in your job search. So these are tools that you can use when you're networking that won't make you feel like you're being disingenuous or you're compromising yourself. You can still be a leader. You can still approach things with a lot of enthusiasm, and you can control it much more than the market would have us believe or have us think. So what is the best way to network if you are a mid to executive level job seeker? Well, let's just talk first about actual networking in general. When we network with our contacts, our inner circle of people that we can pick up the phone and call and say, hey, this is happening, I find that the very best way to manage those relationships when you are in a job transition or in a secret job transition is to approach them by asking for an endorsement. Because in this way, you don't have to back them in a corner and so it, force them into a response, some type of a response in order to help you. Most people aren't going to know of open jobs, but they are also at the same time, you know, hardwired to help you if they can. So a better way to approach somebody rather than, you know, I'm open to new opportunities, I just wanted to run that by you so you knew, so if you heard of anything, you know, you could throw my name in the hat or whatever it may be. Why not go in and say, Jack, I wanted to let you know that I am open to new opportunities. My company's reorganizing, we're going overseas, whatever it is, or I'm sort of secretly vetting opportunities and I'm in the due diligence phase. Here's what I'm thinking of. And then the first thing we do is we let them know, here's the three industries I'm looking into, or here's what the kind of move I'm looking to make, or my goal is to up-level my title. I already have $500,000 worth of I already have $500 million worth of P&L. I think I could do, you know, go to a C-level jump with a, you know, a little bit smaller company. And so what does this say when we approach this way? It says, I know who I am and I know where I'm going. And that's a relief to the person you're talking to. You're still giving them plenty of opportunity to help you. You're just demonstrating that you have thought this through. The next thing you're going to say is, having said that, now that you know the industry I'm looking at or the position I'm looking at or both, would you be so kind or would you be willing to write me a short quote? I'm putting together a page of testimonials, endorsements, you could say, of short quotes with people that have worked with me in various capacities over the last 5 years. Would you be open to writing a line or two about my abilities in managing P&L or about my abilities as a in performance management, mentoring others, mentoring senior staff, or my process improvement capabilities? Or would you be open to writing about my expertise with turnaround situations, mergers and acquisitions? So you coach them a little bit, depending on the person, what you want them to talk about. And now you've asked them for something that is super easy, one or two sentences. And why don't you want a big long letter? precisely because the person will take forever to write it and they don't get read. What does get read? Quotes on the back of the book jacket. So when you think about your testimonials all together, 4, 5, or 6 of them on a page or 8 of them, think about them as short quotes. And I guarantee if you set it up your testimonials page that way, your quotes will all get read. And you'll get them quickly because people can write 1 or 2 sentences that kind of draw the point home. And if they write a paragraph, that's okay. It might be so great you leave the whole thing as it is, or you may pick out a sentence in that paragraph that you want to put quotes around and just use that. Now, that obviously is going to be helpful for other reasons. From a psychological perspective, you have let your contact know not only do you have control over the situation and you have a focus of direction, but you've asked them for something they can give you, and now they know by virtue of the topic that you are looking and you are open. And now they can exercise their leadership abilities and come back and brainstorm, which now you have sort of set them up for success to do as a leader yourself. So you will get more positive responses using this methodology than backing people into a corner and handing them your resume. It seems counterintuitive, but from a humanistic standpoint, from a psychological standpoint, it's not. It's not, because you're giving them something to come and get, in other words, instead of pushing them to give you a response. And there's a big difference in the kind of response you'll get just by the way you're approaching. So they may say to you, gosh, have you, you know, did you know about such and such acquisition that's going on right now? Do you know Jean down there? I can get her your resume. Do you want to give it to me? No, they're more excited than you are because they've come up with this idea. You haven't forced it upon them. Or they may sit and mull it over and then come back the next day and say, you know, I was thinking about your situation last night and I just hired Jack, who I put in charge of North America operations, but we're also going to be expanding into such and such in 6 months. What if we brought you back on in a VP level? We talked about that, and then we looked at bumping you up so you could run that market in 6 months to a year. So you gave the guy or gal time to simmer it, you know, percolate the idea and strategize and come up with things. If you're talking to key decision makers at the executive level, that's what they do, just like you. They're visionaries and they're thinking of solutions and strategies. So, and this way, of course, the best thing about this approach is, you know, you're scot-free when it comes to feeling uncomfortable or disingenuous or like you have to go do this thing that's, you know, super out of character for you. Everybody can do this with, you know, again, a lot of grace and ease, and it's not hard. It's so much easier than feeling like you're pushing people and putting too much pressure on them. So this is the primary way that you can set yourself up for success and set other people up to help you, and because they want to, I guarantee you, no different than you would want to if you were approached the same way. That is how to network without asking for a job. And it seems like it's not easy. It takes some practice. I've really seen, it's funny, executives struggle over the years with things like not taking their resume into a networking meeting, not taking their resume into an informational interview. But if you go in to talk to a, you know, senior vice president of a niche, you know, industry that's sort of on the periphery of what you know, and you're exploring it, and you want to go in and ask them some questions, and, you know, you kind of get a mentoring meeting where you go in and garner his expertise, and he's kind of interested in you, and at one point he says, you know, had you ever thought of maybe working for us? Did you bring a resume with you? And if you, but you know, say, well, it just so happens, and you open your briefcase, then it's like, ah, you know, because, well, you said you were coming in for one thing, but you also brought your resume. So don't put yourself in that position where you're even tempted to do that. There is nothing wrong with saying, well, wasn't the intent for our meeting today. I can get you my resume if you'd like it. How would you like me to do that? Email or mail it, hard mail? And and then they'll respect you more for that. So it's a little bit difficult sometimes to grasp the concept of networking in this way. It's really very passive. It's very hands-off, but you're still hustling. You're still opening doors for yourself. You're just setting the other person up for more success to help you. And that's the difference. I think it's one of the most difficult things that people seem to grasp. But once you get this and wrap your mind around how this works, all networking becomes so much easier for you and for your network. You'll teach them something, too, in the way that you handle yourself. And they'll have more trust in you as a leader because of the way that you play it out. I wanted to touch on, too, how to protect your privacy in a secret job search. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying in a letter or on the phone or in person, oh, and by the way, the search is confidential right now. I wouldn't want this getting back to my team. I don't want to upset them or risk upsetting them just because right now I'm exploring, alternatives. And share that either in a letter or share that in person. It doesn't guarantee that the word won't get out because you can't, control that 100%. But I think it does reduce your risk significantly. How to connect with key players and thought leaders that you don't know. There's two things I wanted to touch upon with this particular point. The first one is most people will not reach out to the kingpin, the big decision maker. They will not pick up the phone. And I'll give you an example of this. Years ago, I wanted to get a radio interview with a man named Peter Clayton, who has a big radio show called Total Picture Radio, and it goes out to HR executives all over the world. And I can't remember how I found him or what my idea was, but I remember emailing him over and over and over again. I really wanted to be on a show, and I had some topics in mind, and I kept pitching it to him, and nothing, no response from the guy. And after a while, I started getting, offended. Like, who does he think he is? He's just refused to email me back. I mean, the guy's so, untouchable that he won't, answer an email. I started having all these thoughts about this poor man, poor Peter. And one day I said, forget it. I'm just going to pick up the phone and call him. And I don't know why I hadn't thought about doing this sooner. And literally months had gone by. I'd tried to reach out 6, 7, 8 different times to this person. So I dial his number, and it's ringing. And all of a sudden he picks up, hello, this is Peter. And my response was to burst out laughing because I thought, I am such an idiot. I couldn't have done this 7 months ago or whenever this whole thing started. I have all these bad thoughts about this poor person. So I burst out laughing and I said, well, you're a hard person to get a hold of over emails. Oh, I'm terrible with email. I'm so sorry. What can I do to help you? So I put myself through all that angst for nothing. But I guess the moral of the story, too, is that people that are in high visibility positions are often a lot more accessible than we initially think. There are ways to get to them through LinkedIn, through picking up the phone, through writing them a letter, through Twitter, through Facebook. It's really, really fascinating how it works. Who's the most difficult to get a hold of? Mid-managers. If you're trying to penetrate a company, you know how you'll hear some people say, oh, you're supposed to go 2 levels above where you want to be. Unless you're a VP and you're talking to the C-level, I never quite understood that because I guarantee you those are the people that are getting bombarded with emails and voicemails. But the guys at the top, no one's thinking of contacting them, but why not? I mean, they're the visionaries, and if you contact them with the right message, which is, I turn lead into gold, do you want some money? In other words, you understand how to be savvy and communicate your skills and metrics, then they're usually quite happy to, give your initiative a minute or two of their time. And even in a phone call after that, and be so impressed that you get an interview out of that. I've seen that happen time and time again. What happens though? Most people just won't step up and do that. They'll just bombard the mid managers. who never answer phone calls because they get a million of them and there's only so much time in the day and they're probably very nice people, but you know, only have so much time to do so many things. The other thing that I wanted to address is LinkedIn. And I'll go ahead and launch into how to network through LinkedIn right now, which is basically there are two things on LinkedIn that you need to understand. Number one is you have to keyword optimize your profile so that there's a lot of ways to do that, and this is not the topic of this call, but basically you have to get the right keywords in there to attract the right opportunities at the right level for you. The second and more important thing that you need to do for your LinkedIn profile is you need to be connected to the key players in your tribe or within your alignment, your focus of direction, so that when they are looking for people like you through LinkedIn or LinkedIn Recruiter app or whatever they're using, you come up in their search results. If you're not in there, if there's three networks, first, second, and third degree network on LinkedIn, if you're not in their network, do you know that you don't come up in their search results? And if you're too far outside of their network, then your picture won't show or your full profile won't show. If the person's using LinkedIn Recruiter app and you're outside of their network, they have to use some kind of an unlock to open up your profile. And so if they're a recruiter, they've got to determine whether whatever they see on your profile that they can see is worth it for them to use the 20 or 25 of those that they get every month as part of their the LinkedIn Recruiter app service that they have. So that is like the big thing, the single most important thing, at least in my opinion, that LinkedIn can do to help you leverage and pull opportunities to you. You've got to get connected to your tribe of people, your key players. And how do you do that? Through LinkedIn groups. It's a two-step process. You join LinkedIn groups, as many as you can, and then you invite other people that are members of those groups into your network. So let's say you're in manufacturing and you would like to stay in California. So let's start with the manufacturing executives groups. Just look them up. Do a quick LinkedIn search for their groups. There's tons of them. And it'll show you how many group members and give you a little description. And then maybe there'll be some local California manufacturing groups or associations that have LinkedIn profile groups, LinkedIn groups rather, that you also want to tap into. So now you're going to join up to 50 groups where you know there's a pretty good concentrated amount of people, places, information that have to do with who you are and what you like to do. And then you're just going to take 20 or 30 minutes a week. You're going to scroll through that member directory. And when you find the key players that look like it would be a good match for you, they work with companies you admire or they're a recruiter or whatever that may be, you're going to send them a little message and say, "Hey, John, you and I are both members of XYZ Manufacturing Group. I'd like to invite you to join my network on LinkedIn." And you will get lots of positive responses to that. And the more you beef up that profile, the more you're connected to the people that need to know you're out there, the more job opportunities you will get coming to you through your profile. You could also connect with like VP of HR for companies that you're interested in. So they've got to know you exist. And that is how to use LinkedIn to network with key players and thought leaders that you don't know. And the other way outside of LinkedIn is literally to pick up the phone and call them. Figure out a way to get to them. Send them some questions and say, "I'd love to garner your expertise. I have two questions. Would you be so kind as to let me, you know, get a little bit of mentoring from you, and it would just mean the world to me. I respect you because of XYZ," or whatever you want to say. But you generally, it's very hard to resist an invitation like that. It's really flattering. Now, if you approach someone and said, "Hey, I need help finding a job. Can you help me?" That's almost borderline offensive, because it's like, what, you know, why should I help you? Who are you? What's in it for me? Why should I be reading this? So we've got to flatter them or compliment them in some way and invite the opportunity for them to talk about what they love, what they're good at, give you a little mentoring. You know, I've worked with thousands of executives, and when they get to the C-suite, there's something very common that I'll see, and I used to do a lot of the Myers-Briggs profile results, kind of going over results with people this way. And there was a running theme with executives. They got to a point where mentoring others and performance management, helping others succeed, became one of the more important, like the top three things that they did that was the most satisfying as their role as an executive, which might explain why this is a pretty easy thing to make happen as long as you just take the initiative to do it, because they're sort of naturally wired for that at that point in their career. So I promised you six main ways to use networking in a job search. Let me just get my list here. And I've already actually gone over a lot of them. So networking with people you know. I'm just going to run through this list. Networking with recruiters. We'll come back to that. Networking with people you don't know. How to do that informational interviewing. We'll go over that too. Networking on LinkedIn to expand your network. We just went over that. The reason you're reaching out to them is because you're both a member of a group. So that's your reason. That's the point and the takeaway with that particular component of networking. Networking with hiring authorities, and then networking through associations as thought leaders. So let's start back up with recruiters. When you network with recruiters, whether it's picking up the phone because you found them on Google or through LinkedIn, the idea is, well, first of all, let me back up and say, you will want to identify recruiters that might be able to help you if you're staying in your industry or you're in some kind of a segment that makes sense to call recruiters. If you're really looking to dramatically change industries or dramatically transition, or you know, you want to be a VP and go to a C-level, sometimes they're not so helpful because they are not poised to help you with your career trajectory. They're fulfilling an order that one of their client companies gave them, and they may enjoy making the match and everything, but still in all their mentalities, but generally going to be, I fit square pegs and square holes. That's what I have to do. They're paid a handsome amount of money to go find exactly what that client company has told them to go find. And if they don't do that, then you know, that client company may not be a client for much longer. So they really are very responsible for bringing back very good matches. So if you're really outside of the industry, that, you know, you're choosing a brand new industry or radically different title, they may not be very helpful for you. However, if you're stellar background and you're staying in your industry, they can be tremendously helpful. So you can Google, let's say you're in the medical device industry. You could Google recruiters plus medical device. And don't worry about the industry or the state, because they're industry focused. They're not geographics focused. So they could be in Chicago. I have a client in California. It's totally normal. It happens all the time. You find these recruiters, and then what do you say when you're networking with them? You can simply call them up and say, hey, John, you know, here's my name, and I'm in your industry. I'm in the medical device industry, and I wanted to introduce myself and see if it was okay to send you my resume. And now, what is this phone call for? You can certainly send your resume. When I was a recruiter, I used to get, this is when we faxed everything. I used to get faxes in all day long. I just never forget that noise. The fax coming in, and it would be resumes, just construction resumes, because I was a commercial construction recruiter, and I'd look at them, and a lot of the resumes weren't very presentable. Some of them were outside of what I was doing at that point in time, but every once in a while, I would run across someone really good, and I would set that resume aside on my desk and, you know, anticipate getting to it, doing something with it. And I would always be amazed how few people would call me, how few people would follow up with a phone call. But the ones that did got my ear, and if I couldn't help them, then oftentimes I gave them a little bit of advice on places I felt could be helpful for them, or referred them on to a recruiter that might be more suitable for them. So it is really helpful to follow up with a phone call if you're going to send your resume, or call first. The primary objective here is you're getting their ear, And you're trying to do a very specific thing, which is you're trying to put your wonderful, professional, lovely sounding voice to a lovely, professional, buttoned up, clear, beautiful, focused resume so that you're wowing that recruiter as much as possible, just like you want to wow a company. And that is the end game. So if you leave them a message or you get them on the phone, try not to think, to sort of play the end result. Be very short-sighted in your calls. You're trying to just make a good first impression. You want to sound like a professional. The last thing you want to do is bark, orders at them. Oh, I'm looking for this. I'm looking for that. I won't take a penny less than $275. You don't want to go there at all. You just upset the recruiter and they won't want to talk to you. But if you sound professional, like somebody that's worth having a conversation with, then you stand a greater chance of opening up those doors. And again, you're being true to yourself, your leadership abilities, your aptitudes, your skills, your strengths, your charismatic personality, all the things that make you the wonderful leader or executive that you are. So that's basically an introduction to how to network with recruiters. A couple other points that remember that they are given searches by their client companies, either retained or contingency, so they don't work for you. And they don't need to take demands from you. The people they're sort of beholden to are their companies, the companies that they represent that pay them. So treat that with what it is and just go into the conversation with that perspective. And, you could certainly ask them, do you have any open projects or any searches that, might be in alignment with a VP of operations or a senior project manager or a CFO? Do you have any CFO searches right now? Do you know of anybody that searches for places CFOs in XYZ industry? Whatever it is, that's going to show you to have a lot of savvy. Don't take too much of their time, but you can go in with a couple questions, and they might have something for you, and then they're going to start firing questions at you, and that's certainly good too. So those are some basic ways to network with recruiters without getting too deep into it. Networking with hiring authorities. To network with hiring authorities, again, HR is generally going to want to push you into open job searches that they have. They can kind of only operate in that sphere. But if you are talking to key decision makers, there is nothing wrong with picking up the phone. And I find just an informal kind of me to you tone is perfect. You can either say, look, what I do is I drive revenue. I've had a lot of success in our industry here, the oil and gas industry or the steel industry or whatever it is. I've always admired your company. Would love to send you my resume. If the time's right, maybe we can chat. You're coming across like somebody he may want to know, he or she may want to know. Remembering what the CEO's greatest challenge is, finding and retaining top talent. So you can go in saying, I am top talent. Is the timing right? Do you want to chat? And worrying about them not having anything or having a bad day and hanging up the phone is really a waste of your time. We're not worried so much about that. We're worried about not getting to enough people in the companies that are within what would be considered, your low-hanging fruit that you want to reach out and possibly get a position with or start talking with. So all we're trying to do is the same game, very short-sighted. We're just trying to make a good initial first impression. We want to sound really savvy, professional, friendly, upbeat, don't take too much time, just, 30 seconds, that it might put it in his mind, or his or her mind, this may be a person that I want to continue to have a relationship with, that I might continue to talk with. Sure, send me a resume. I said, okay, I'll send you my resume. Would you like me to follow up with a phone call? Yeah, you can call me next week. Fantastic. I'll do that right now. And what's your email address? So there's nothing wrong with just hitting the bullseye just like that. Very informal, me to you. If you've got something, great. If you don't, absolutely no problem. Just introducing the idea because I really am a big fan of your company. Of course, if you have a big splashy title or you come from a company that he already knows, that helps even more. Talking about your accomplishments in his industry, next best thing. So there's all kinds of really cool things that you can sort of toss out there in one sentence or two sentences to kind of grab his attention and get him interested in you. The second way to reach out and network with people you don't know is to ask for an informational interview. And this is another really cool thing that you can do. And again, I touched on this before a little bit where I said, hey, John, big fan of yours, just read about your recent acquisition in the Business Journal. I've been in the oil industry for X amount of years. I'm looking to stay in it. I decided what I was going to do as part of my due diligence is get a little bit of mentoring from hopefully three or four people that I really, really admire before I make my next move. I'm a VP now. I'm not asking for a job interview. I just want to make that clear. Would you be open to meeting with me or talking with me for a few minutes just so I can just garner your expertise, ask you a few questions? Would that be okay? Really, really hard to say no to that, even if he's busy, he or she. So that is one way to introduce yourself to somebody that you don't know. I've done that lots of times. My clients have done this lots and lots of times. It works. And the more you practice this and you do it, it's really entrepreneurial. It's kind of a plucky, you know, you're taking initiative. It becomes really comfortable really fast. It's really amazing how that works. So those are two ways to connect with quote-unquote higher-end authorities. And then the sixth way, through associations that I brought up, that would be more as a thought leader. None of my strategies involve you passing out resumes. I do a one-page networking resume for executives, and that more is for impromptu things where a recruiter might be asking for kind of a quick snapshot, or someone wants to give a board a quick snapshot of, you know, where you've been without going so much into operational things, more focusing on leadership aptitudes. But when you network with associations, again, you can certainly pass out business cards, but it's more to try to get a 50,000-foot view of your industry, where the movement is in your industry, who the players are. Introduce yourself to them. You don't have to go in for the kill right then and there. I just don't think that works as well as getting them possibly interested in you. You know, just, you know, going up and pouncing on them is much more aggressive than getting somebody interested in, oh, we need to recruit her, or yeah, talk to him about such and such. So, and it also allows your confidence to remain intact when you're a little bit more strategic. So, yes, go network, go meet people, go talk to people, but don't go in with the pressure of putting on yourself, I've got to hand out 10 resumes or I'm looking for a job, because that actually energy kind of wafts off of us and I think repels people. So I found that the best thing to do is just act opposite than what you feel like you should be doing, which is just play it cool, have a lot of confidence, have fun, don't put expectation on yourself, and give yourself the freedom to be there and enjoy and ask questions and compliment somebody about something about their product or their service or their company that you love, that you have identified as something really, really great. You know, it's so wonderful that you are taking that initiative because this industry is lagging behind. Don't you feel that way? Oh, yes. Well, that's why we did it, and I'm the one that actually rolled out that initiative. That person is going to remember you and your compliment. You can always come back around if you exchange business cards and ask them something later. But now you've got a relationship to build off of in order to do that. The other thing you can do through associations is position yourself as a thought leader so the perception creates another magnetism. So why not speak? Why not write a blog post on something that you love to talk about that has to do with your industry, something you're passionate about? Call up your local association and say, I'd like to get more involved. Do you need a volunteer for a blog post? Do you need an ambassador for new members? When's the next mixer? Can I help with the next conference? Whatever it is, you can get more networked. And the cool thing about putting your actual energy into associations is that that particular entity is a portal of, you know, people that this little concentrated portal of people that you want to know that are in your tribe, in your sphere of industry and expertise. So if you're going to invest your time, you might as well do it in the place that gives you the biggest ROI. So I love doing the thought leadership thing through associations. And actually, the whole reason that I was able to get on Forbes and MSN and all these other places, Wall Street Journal, was because I first got published through Career Directors International. Not because they reached out to me, but I reached out to them with that same cry of request, you know, hey, I write about these really thorny topics, Laura. Do you need some of these for your newsletter, your blogs, or she says, oh my gosh, yes, we're always looking for content. Absolutely. What do you write about? Pitch me some topics. That's how all that started years and years ago. And then she referred me on to somebody else who saw my article somewhere else. And then the next thing you know, I'm in major media. So thought leadership is the gift that keeps on giving. It does not take much to ramp up that perception. It's something you can do across platforms like LinkedIn. LinkedIn is a great broadcaster for thought leadership. Just read a great article in the Wall Street Journal on XYZ. Here's a picture of me with keynote speaker whoever at the such and such conference. You can use those activity broadcasts once or twice a month for stuff like that. And then that, again, solidifies that perception really quickly. Let me see if there's anything else that I can cover and give you today in the session. The gatekeeper. Yes, let me close with talking about the gatekeeper. And let me remind you, too, that one of the things that I'm giving you with this particular coaching program today on networking is a whole list of phone scripts of 20 different situations and what to say, including things like, we're not hiring right now, you have to talk to HR, I'm not interested. Any conceivable situation, I've provided you with a really gracious and easy comeback so that you always come out smelling like a rose. So please look at that, because that was something I just created this year. I'm really proud of it, and it was born from a lot of clients asking me the same questions over and over again, and us role playing, and I thought, why don't I just put this in a report so everybody can have it? So I thought that would be perfect for including with this call, because most of that is networking. So part of that includes things that you can say to get past the secretary or the gatekeeper if you're trying to get to a key contact. So I'll just close by going over a couple of these things now. The first thing you can do is a person answering the phone for an executive usually has a cadence they use. So, you know, they say, hello, and is John there? Yes, may I ask who's speaking? Oh, it's Mary Elizabeth Bradford. And what company are we with? I'm with the Career Artisan. And may I tell him what his call is regarding? And then she puts me on hold, or he or she. So if you front load everything, then it throws her off a little bit, and she's more apt to put you through. Don't ask me the science behind how this works. I don't know. I just know from doing it a million times as a recruiter, this works really well. So you front load and you say, hi, this is Mary Elizabeth Bradford. I'm calling for John, following up on my correspondence, and I'm with the Career Artisan. And you'll hear the person sort of kind of pause and try to recalibrate or digest what you've just said and ask you to repeat something you've said before they kind of put you on hold. Now, we're not trying to play games with people or trick people. What you're trying to do is save time. And I only share these things because I like to find the easiest ways to get things done. And engaging with the person that is keeping you from the key decision maker is not the best investment of your time, in my opinion. And so, this is how to get past that situation as quickly as possible. So I just want to make sure you understand the spirit in which I'm telling you this. I'm not, you know, suggesting to be a sneaky, you know, sneak or anything like that. But there are ways, and they are good to use, so you can just get the job done and get done what you set out to do. The other thing you can do is if you're calling because you read about the company, a merger, acquisition, or in the business journal, or an article on Forbes, then mention that I'm calling to follow up on the article on Forbes. And then if he or she presses, you can always just say, it's personal, or it's confidential. And there is nothing wrong with doing that. And if you get somebody that is having a bad day and he or she starts to get upset, it's no problem to just say, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to cause any kind of a situation here. Do they have voicemail? I'm happy to leave a voicemail. So everything's very, very professional. There's no pressure. There's no pressure on them. There's no pressure on you. And that's the important thing, because if I can show you how to do this in a way that's really gracious, you'll actually do it. And that's the most important thing about all of this. So very happy and excited to give you these little gems that I've amassed over the years as a recruiter and as a coach, and these are things that I've watched my executive clients do with a lot of success. So feel confident going into applying some of these. And I think a good takeaway for this call is start to think about two or three ways, based on our call today, that you can network a little bit differently moving forward with the people you know, with people you don't know. Think about one of the six ways of networking that we went over today that I covered that you can apply to your situation, and then maybe next week commit to doing one of them. Just putting one foot forward in front of the other gets, you know, kind of the juices flowing. In other words, it gets the motor warmed up. And so don't feel like you have to do everything at once. Just do one thing. And once you do it, then it'll be easier to take the second step and then the third step. So taking smaller steps with things that are new is always a lot easier than it is to try to, you know, foist yourself into deep water and hope everything comes out, you know, okay. So I hope this has been helpful. Thank you for joining me, and I wish you every success.